Hi there. Welcome to this week's episode of the podcast with me, Russell Davis. This week we're looking at how to increase IVF success rate. I truly believe the success rate of IVF and other fertility treatments is unnecessarily low because the mind and emotions are not factored in. So what can you do to improve your chance of success? Well, let's dive in and find out. Remember to rate the podcast and subscribe so you keep updated with future episodes. Loving you. How can you increase your IVF success rate? And I often work with a gynecologist in London that specialises in women over 40. And he believes it's into preparation. He believes it's about the patient really being in the best state physically and also psychologically. So he does a lot of pre-tests for the whole body, not just the fertility, to try and help the body be in the most healthy state as a whole. And he wants to make sure the patient's getting the psychological support they may need. So I think a key thing is preparation. And the psychological aspect is often either ignored or not aware of or just an afterthought. And not just trying to reduce stress. A lot of people try to reduce stress because, yes, it's a very stressful experience. But for me, it goes beyond that. Now, the first thing to recognise is the power of the mind-body. We call it the mind-body link, but it's one system. You know, Boston IVF did a study with Harvard Medical School, and they had a bunch of patients going through IVF. Another group went through IVF, but with a mind-body program alongside their IVF treatment. And the couples that went through the mind-body program had an over double success rate of those that just did straight IVF. And for me, it's not just about tools and strategies for reducing stress. For me, it's about changing our understanding about what stress is, where it comes from. It's about changing our relationship with stress. Because you can have all the best tools and techniques in the world, but do they really work? Are they really sustainable? When you're stressed, do you really have the mental bandwidth to remember them and apply them? They may give moments of respite, but do they really reduce your overall stress levels? Do they really give you a sense of peace within yourself? For me, we need to go further upstream. We need to look at what stress really is and our relationship with it. We need to go further upstream, away from the content of our thoughts and our feelings, to look at the nature of a thought or feeling. Because our misunderstanding that inadvertently means we start fighting thought, or trying to manage our stress levels, trying to manage your state of mind, which is pretty much impossible. And I think I've shared this story before, I want to share it again. It wasn't that long ago, maybe 150 years ago, which is not that long ago, we thought illness was caused by smells. People used to carry posy of flowers around to keep away bad smells so they didn't get ill. It's very common at the time of the plague. In the UK, where there's a children's nursery rhyme called A Ring, A Ring of Roses, A Pocket Full of Posies, a tissue, we all fall down. That's from the time of the plague, where it's a carrier, this pocket of posies, this posy of flowers to keep away the plague. They called them miasmas. And back then, yeah, life expectancy wasn't very long. And then there was a kind of breakthrough in understanding the true cause of illness. This was before even microscopes, and we can see germs. Doctors around the world has started to explore, maybe we got it wrong. There's one in particular, Semmelweis. I think it was an Austrian doctor, European doctor, who ran a hospital with his friend and colleague. And there were two maternity wards in the hospital. One was run by nurses, the other was run by him and his colleague. And back then, women often died in childbirth. Childbed fever was a common cause of women dying through childbirth. And he noticed that the childbed fever rate, kind of fatality rate of women going through childbirth in the nurses' ward, wasn't about kind of 2%. But his ward, his fellow doctors, like 10%, 12%. He thought, why is that? And actually his colleague, his fellow doctor who ran the hospital with him, actually died. And he did the autopsy. And he died of childbed fever. And he couldn't understand how. He noticed a gash on the doctor's hand. He thought maybe he nicked himself with his own scalpel. He started thinking, maybe we're carrying something. Now back then, because I didn't understand germs, doctors were like mechanics. Mechanics work on one car, then go and work another car. They don't change their ovals, wash their ovals, or change their tools, or wash their tools. These doctors might do an autopsy one moment, then go and deliver a baby the next moment. Same apron, same, they're washing their hands. So he thought, maybe we're carrying something on our clothes or the instruments. So he put in a policy that all the doctors in the hospital must wash their hands, change their instruments, change their ovals between patients. And they were uproar about it. They couldn't believe it. We weren't taught this in medical school. This is not scientific. But actually, the death rate reduced dramatically down to the same level as the nurses as a result of that. So he was instrumental in towards us discovering germ theory. But he wasn't accepted. His name was struck off. And sadly, he went mad in a mental institute. Sadly, died from wounds from being beaten in a mental institute. And if they'd listened to him, maybe he wouldn't have died from those wounds. So there was a complete radical step change in understanding of physical illness. And I think we're heading towards a similar kind of step change in understanding of mental illness. Because part of us often still thinks that stress is caused by these things in the air. I'm joking now, but often we think certain situations or people or the office or our work or certain people give off these stress particles and these are the sources of stress. And if we think that's a source of stress, we've got two options. One is avoid the source or trying to manage the symptoms. But what if stress is not caused by those circumstances? Because if it was the circumstances causing our stress, then the stress would never change until the circumstances changed. But some days feel better than others. If it was the circumstances causing our stress, then everyone would have the same psychological experience to those circumstances. But it doesn't work that way. An emergency crew can go to a very traumatic accident, and some get McDonald's on the way home, and some get signed off for PTSD for 6 months. So nothing makes us feel anything. Stress is only a problem if we think it's a problem. It's our relationship with our feelings that cause the problem, not the feelings itself. The feelings are thoughts. The feelings are imagination. And the more we see them for what they are, we don't have to give it a second thought. We don't have to be scared of it. We don't have to manage it. We don't have to resent it. We can allow it. And it just moves through our being, and fresh thoughts are always coming in. Our mind is always settling, like our breath settles, when we allow it. We don't try to manage our breath. We're constantly trying to manage our state of mind. What if we didn't need to? Well, if we could know we're okay, whether we feel okay or not. Well, if we could just allow ourselves to notice the different ebbs and flows of our psychological experience and allow it. We'll spend more time in a place of peace, knowing we're okay. So my three tips or three bits of advice about IVF is based on this power of the mind-body link. It really is a powerful, powerful phenomenon. And recognise it. My clients invest a lot of time, energy, money on their psychology. Yeah, they know it's beyond fertility. They also know that it puts them into this place where the magic's more likely to happen. So the first thing is to recognise your relationship with stress. Well, if you begin to see it, it's thought, it's imagination, it's stories, it's the meaning you're attaching to things, creating your experience, not your circumstances. Nothing can predict the future, not even your stress. Just begin to notice your relationship with stress. Second thing is being aware of the 2-week wait, often the most stressful aspect of the process. And last week I looked at going beyond affirmations, and I recommend if you haven't heard that, you go back to listen to that. But in the 2-week wait, often people visualize themselves being pregnant. I encourage you to come back to this moment. Be in the moment you're in, be in the day you're in, and noticing from day one, from embryo transfer, technically you're pregnant. And to be with your body in that moment, what is it you want your body to do in this moment? And then you can imagine it moving out into the future, what you want to do from there. But start in this moment, connect to your body in this moment. Everything you need is in this moment. Be with your body in this moment. Connect in this moment. You can't connect in the future. Connect to your body in this moment. And imagine what you want it to be doing in this moment. And the third thing is actually the embryo transfer itself. There was a study that looked at stress levels within embryo transfer, did they make a difference for successful implantation. And an Israeli doctor looked at this, and he used all sorts of different kind of means of trying to relax the patient through the embryo transfer procedure. And the outcome of that study was the more relaxed the patient was, the higher the success rate of the implantation, the higher, you know, the number of women got pregnant as a result of implantation. So my advice is to find a way of being relaxed in your embryo transfer. Most hospitals I know allow, or clinics allow, you to take an MP3 player in on airline mode or phone on airline mode to listen to something. Create your own little bubble where you can be and be relaxed. Don't let people rush you. Take time before and during and after. Do it on your terms. And allow yourself to be as relaxed in that place, in that process, as much as possible. And that's why I love listening to something. It just, I can close my eyes and go somewhere else. And just imagine again what your body, what you want your body to do in that moment. So they're my three top tips about increasing a success rate with IVF. One is the psychological journey, and in particular your relationship with stress. The second is, when it comes to the 2-week wait, or even throughout the whole process, just connect to your body in that day. What do you want your body to do in that day? And then begin to move that out to the future. And the third thing is, be as relaxed as possible through the embryo transfer. Take something to listen to help you be in a state of relaxation. And for me, just to finish one final thing, which touched on last week, it's about being, a state of being. The more relaxed you are, the more you come back to the here and now, the more you let go of stress or don't get caught up into it, you come back to the here and now. and the two we wait about being with your body in the here and now. I am. Be in this moment of state of I am. And enjoy being who you are in this moment, connecting to everything you need in this moment within you. We're designed for reality. You have everything you need to thrive in any moment when we're in the moment. And you can breathe that in. And that state of being in any moment knows you're okay. And knows whatever happens, you're going to be okay. You're going to be okay, whatever happens. Loving you.